Kickoff with Cathal Minogue and Sky Sports.
Watch every Premier League match this season with Sky Sports and Sports Extra.
How's it going, everybody? You're listening to The Kickoff. I've got Kevin Kilbane with me once again, all the way from Canada. How's the weather this week, Kevin? Because it's been pretty bad here in Ireland.
Well, you know what? Every time I speak to everyone back home in Ireland and I'm telling them about the weather, they're getting bored of it now. But we have not come above minus 10, I think, in the last 2 weeks. We've had lows. Last weekend was minus 30, 31, I think it was. So outrageous weather, outrageous stuff, yeah.
And are schools still going and all that? Like, are you trying to get the kids to
school?
No.
We had Monday, actually, we were off. Monday, we had a really bad snowstorm that came through on Sunday night. So the kids were off on Monday. But other than that, in all honesty, life just goes on. They get the roads ploughed, the snow's cleared, and away you go. I don't know, you may have seen pictures from Toronto, because Toronto's had its biggest downfall of snow, so I think since about 1944 last week. We're about an hour and a half, whatever it is, from Toronto where we are, because we're actually a bit further north. We usually get it worse, but Toronto had torrential weather over the weekend, yeah. But again, minus 30, whatever it was, but the snow has just killed everybody, so there's a big clear-up job going downtown right now.
Okay, yeah. Well, we think we're bad with Storm Chandra that we just had. It did cause
a lot
of...
Well, that's bad enough. I've seen that. I've seen the floods and things, so it's, you know, I think when you see that, it makes it all, you know, become very relevant in your mind, don't you? You think of the people that it's affected, you know?
Yeah, it's a sad time for a lot of people. And we're going to get more rain as well this weekend as well, so... But there is football, yeah. So if you are staying indoors and you're staying hopefully safe and sound from all the bad weather we are getting... There is a lot of football to watch, and there was a lot of football last night. As we record this, the last group games of the Champions League were wrapping up, and the last night is actually quite exciting because there's so many games on. You might as well just watch the goals show, really. Like, yeah. There's no point picking a game, is there?
I know, and that's what it is, because you're constantly looking. I mean, everyone, the goalie at Benfica that scored the goal later on against Real Madrid, it's just amazing. I forget his name off the top of my head, but when you see that happening, and I was listening to Mourinho post-game talking about it, saying that, look, we were told that we were grand, we were in, that was fine. And then all of a sudden, and I think Mourinho was saying, typical Jose Mourinho, I made substitutions to try and kill the game off. And then he was told they needed another goal and he didn't have any more subs to make. So he had to then go with it a little bit and just try and get a goal. And obviously the goalkeeper getting up there. So it was a great end to that. But I don't know. I don't know, Carl, yourself, how you felt about it, but what is it? I think there's five out of the top eight are English or Premier League teams.
Yeah.
Six in the top 12 are the Premier League side. They've dominated it, Premier League sides. I don't think it's that. That's not necessarily a reflection to me that the Premier League's the strongest. We know they're financially strong, but it is certainly a Champions League format that is favouring the best sides. I know it didn't necessarily work that way last season, but this season it seems to have really gone with the teams that have got the most financial influence over the league, I think.
Yeah, there was a great moment in the Sky Sports goals show when they're watching the Benfica game at the end.
And Benfica have a free kick on the edge of the box, and the keeper is up.
Why?
And it's the keeper scored. He has.
Oh, my God.
Well, wow. The Benfica goalkeeper, Anthony Trubin, in the 98th minute.
What are you saying?
They must move up because the goalie come up. They're 3-2 up. So they must have needed a goal.
Yeah.
They must have needed a goal. Otherwise, why would the goalie come up?
You're winning 3-2. All right. Goal difference.
Goal difference. He's got to go in.
Must go up.
They're getting mad, the Benfica players. And right. Mourinho.
Yes, right, okay. I was so fixed with the top eight.
Wow.
Let's go down to the playoff places. You're absolutely right.
Okay.
Good job, someone's alert. There's been a lot to try and stay across tonight. But
wow.
Yeah, with that goal, on goal wow. difference,
goal
great
difference.
Spot. Benfica, that's why the goalkeeper was
that's
up.
A header.
Oh, they crept into
wow.
the playoff places.
What a header.
Say you'd drop
whoa.
Out. Benfica goalkeeper. Has sent his team.
Wow, what a header.
Unbelievable.
Those are the moments that, you know, you want to get more of.
Yes.
But yeah, they're a serious dominance. And like, it could become six in the last 16 if Newcastle win the playoff as
yeah.
well. So it is complete dominance. But let's look at Premier League for a moment, because this might be good news for Manchester United. The further that Arsenal and Man City go in the Champions League, it's more games that they have to play. And is this good news for Carrick, who's on quite the run at the moment? But let's talk about Arsenal and Man City at the moment. It's now becoming a title race, but it's not the most how do I put this? It's like two drunk lads running after each other, and they're both kind of stumbling to the finish line, and they're, you know, Arsenal are in the lead.
They're trying to get a taxi. Who's first to the taxi?
Yeah, and they keep on tripping up. And saying, oh, then the second fella's getting a chance, but he's not taking his chance. He falls over as well.
It's Villa might come through and pit them off the back of that. Too drunk.
Yeah. But there is that feeling that they're both kind of stumbling now, you know, which makes it exciting to watch, and you want a title race. But I mean, Arsenal 4 points. They were, you know, sitting in the sunshine there. But all of a sudden now, it's becoming squeaky bum time, isn't it?
It is a little bit. There's a funny aspect to this, because I think we spoke a few weeks ago about it not being a great Premier League season in general, and there's so many teams that's able to take points off each other. I think many might say that just shows the strength of the Premier League and where it's at right now. But I think it is great that sides aren't dominating. I think that's the way that we would always want it. You know, the Man City and Liverpool that have got 100 points and they've dominated by only losing maybe one game all season. I don't think it's really where we want to see it. I think we want to see a much more competitive league, that at least when we get into March and April time, that we've got a real fight in the last 8 to 10 games of the season. That's, I think, where we would all want it. So regardless of whether we think the quality is there or not, which actually I don't think it has been great this year. But in relation to the two of them, Carl, it's funny watching them, because City, because they've played such a style of football in the last 10 years or so under Guardiola, and they've played such a way. Last season, when you saw City, you couldn't believe the way that they were playing. Now, it has been a change of style for this year, the way that they're playing, and maybe they've tried to get a system in place to suit Haaland, which is understandable. But it hasn't been the vintage Guardiola way that we've seen, even since his Barcelona and Bayern Munich days. It's a very different style of play. Arsenal, whatever you think of Arsenal, I've watched them so many times this year, and they aren't great to watch. I think so many neutrals would accept that, but they've got a way to get the job done, and they've got so supreme quality when they get the chances in the final third anyway. So I hope Villa can make it more of a three horse race. I really hope that they can do that, but it looks likely it is going to be City and Arsenal. And I think once we get through this period, I think it was always going to be a tough period for both those sides anyway, regarding the amount of games that's been played over Christmas and things like that. I do feel as though once you're into February, it does start to settle down a little bit more. Champions League is done through the group stages right now as well. So there is a slight break for the top sides to have maybe focus on Premier League over the next 2 or 3 weeks to really solely try to get the form back on track. And I think that's the way it's going to be. So I think form will improve, but it might be dropping 1 point or dropping 2 points and drawing a game when you're in winning positions that might affect them come the end of the season. So I genuinely believe that'll be the way that it's going to go. And the way that Arsenal have played across this season, I can't see them, Carl, dropping that many more points unless it's a total capitulation and they really fall apart entirely.
Yeah, Damien Delaney was speaking during the week with the Irish Independent, and he was talking about the two centre-backs for Arsenal, and he was saying that without them, they wouldn't be where they are, and they are the best two centre-backs in the league. Would you go along with that? I mean, what if something happened to one of them? Is that where they could be in a bit of trouble? January was very kind in terms of transfers for Manchester City, so they're coming with a bit more firepower now.
Well, I think that's the case, isn't it? And I know, you know, they've been struggling defensively, Man City, haven't they? So getting Gehi in and getting that deal over the line, I think that's going to help them and give them more stability. Obviously, I mean, I think I read last week, Carl, I think you might correct me, but I think City were favourites after Arsenal lost to Man United last weekend. I think that was the case that I read, that City are actually, or certainly it's as close as you've got now in that title race, which is remarkable considering the way that Arsenal have been. But I do think Arsenal's defence has been something that Mikel Arteta has had to get right. It's something that's tripped Arsenal up for 15, 20 years, not just in the last 3 or 4 years. It's been an area that they've not been able to sustain, you know, a settle back for to start with, or whatever system they've played. Now, all of a sudden, they've got a settled unit, but also they've got top-class players that's been playing back there that don't make a lot of mistakes. And I think that's certainly the area that's been helping them. Can they sustain it? Look, as I was saying before, I think the way that they play, it's not just the back four that keeps them so tight. It's the unit of the side. They're very, very rigid in how they play. And then when they win the ball, they're almost able to break from deeper line positions. So I think that's something that they're not going to change. So that they're not necessarily going to be a side. I know United maybe disproved that last weekend, but I don't expect them to be long-term over the next 3 or 4 months, a side that's going to lose 2 and 3 goals every week. So it's about just being solid, and that's why they've been getting those 1-0 wins. If they concede, you may be expecting to get 2 goals, and I think that's the quality that they've got, that they probably will do that. So I think Arsenal probably will win it, should win it, but the mentality has always been questioned around Arsenal, and if they fall apart again, I don't know where they can go from it in the next few years, because this mentality thing that keeps getting thrown at them about not able to sustain it, even going back to the World Cup year in Qatar, Carl. Remember when they were so dominant through the first half of the season, and maybe the World Cup being a Winter World Cup was used as an excuse, but it was a capitulation from January onwards.
Yeah.
So that's what people are looking at really right now, to say that's almost like the typical Arsenal. That's the message that's being thrown at them. So they've got to disprove that theory and really go on now and go on to the next level and just continue what they've done in the first half of the season.
Yeah, and sometimes you just need that monkey off your back. But I don't think there'll be too much patience left for Arteta if this isn't the season and they don't go on to win it. One thing that City and Arsenal do have in common is they both lost to Michael Carrick's Manchester United. Look, it's maybe a stupid question, but what does he have to do now to get the job? I know Roy Keane was saying that even if he wins every single game between now and the end of the season, he's not the right man for the job. What does he have to do?
Well, if he gets them in the Champions League, if he qualifies for the Champions League, gets them in there, because we know what the finances and that brings in for the team. And that's what Man United are. I spoke about it the other week. Man United are almost a franchise now. That's the way that they are. Success, you know, in terms of winning trophies, is irrelevant. Qualifying for the Champions League is more beneficial to United as this franchise type team in comparison to a lot of the other sides. So if they get into the Champions League, I think that's obviously going to play into his favour. You know, if they win every game to the end of the season, he undoubtedly will get the job. There'll be no doubt about it, because there'll be very few that can come in and say that he can't take the job because of what he's done. But you look at it on the fact, or on the face of it, for the first two games, I know City and Arsenal, however we're looking at them, but you could easily say that it's been United's best performances in 2 or 3 years. That's the way that I saw it. Certainly, I didn't watch all of the Arsenal game because I was in and out of the match, but I watched the Man City game and they were so good against City. And although they had less possession, they created so many chances, so many openings in the game. And they did the same against Arsenal. I thought the first 20 minutes against Arsenal, it looked as though the game might have got away from them. They looked like they just had a bit of a different mentality about them, that they were able to recognise what Arsenal were doing, stem the flow and stop them in how they were doing things, and then able to build things for themselves. So, yeah, mightily impressive in those two games. But I think, you know, anyone that's watched Man United in the last 10 years are always going to recognise this fact, is it's kind of irrelevant what they've been doing against some of those top sides. It's what they're doing against, and again, without being disrespectful, it's Brentford, it's Brighton, it's Crystal Palace and all these sort of sides. They've got to find consistency in beating those sides to back up these big results that they've had in the last 2 weeks. That's the only way that Carrick can get the job. If he is sustaining the form, keeping things on an even keel, keeping the players level-headed. I think if they do that, I think he's in with a great shot of getting the job. He simply has to be, just on the fact is that United haven't been in the Champions League for the last couple of seasons. He's got to get them back into that sort of territory again. And they're in a great position to do so with what they've done in the last few weeks.
Yeah, it'll be interesting this weekend. They do play Fulham on Sunday at 2 o'clock in Old Trafford. And that's the kind of game where you want to really see what his teams are about, because he's only ever played the big teams if you look back at his last games, you know. So it's actually quite impressive, but also very interesting. You'd wonder what will this team be like against the Fulham? What stick does he beat him with over a team that sometimes, you know, the bookies would say United are favourites, but Fulham are really picking up form as well. So that is the game. These are the kind of games where he will be tested, as you said.
Yeah. Well, and I know it's easy to say because we know, as I was talking before, the strength of the Premier League throughout, everybody knows the teams have improved, financial power that all these sides have got. So it won't be easy. And I think we know that. But United have got to bring the level, I just say the level of performance that they've been, that they've shown in those two games, and then in sparks or in at times that we've seen United produce, they've got to bring it to this game, because invariably when you've seen them, certainly at home, when they've played against sides like, and again, I put Crystal Palace, Brighton, Brentford in the category of Fulham, and I know what they've done and I know where Fulham are. They've got so many good players. Harry Wilson's having this, you know, a real standout season for them, and he's a huge danger. But United, if they are going to be considered that real top tier sides and qualify for the Champions League, they have to beat him at home. You've got to win those home games. And I'm probably judging that across 18 Premier League sides, that United have got to be really thinking that we're going to go and win this game. And that's not always been the case. So I think it is the perfect opportunity for Michael Carrick to put his credentials out there, or to put himself on the line here and say, win that game, win it well, play well. And I think then we will judge United differently if they do that this weekend, because I think it will give them so much confidence going forward.
Yeah, consistency is what you want to see as a United fan. And that's when you can really talk about the team, is if they can back up the performances. As you said, one of the other teams we mentioned there that are in the top four, Aston Villa, and they're having a fantastic season. They play Brentford at the same time on Sunday, 2 p.m. We were talking about Brentford and Keith Andrews the first time we chatted on the show. That was a couple of weeks ago, and they were in flying form, and they've lost the last two games to Chelsea and to Forest. But still, and I'll have Frank Carroll from the Irish Bees, the Irish Brentford Supporters Club, on the show later on. And talking to him off air, he was saying, you know, he's still pretty happy, like, the, you know, a killer against Forest, they had chances early doors, and against Chelsea as well, they had chances where they could win it, but they're always in with a shout now. And I saw Jamie Carragher during the week talking about how impressed he is with Keith Andrews and how he talks to the media. He said that's a big part of it too, you know, and I'm sure that transfers into the dressing room. Maybe you'd be good at management now, because obviously you talk so well to the media, Kevin. Maybe management is where you could go.
I can tell you now, I'd probably fall apart. I'll fall to pieces if I was put in front of the media in a real professional capacity. You know, we can waffle on here now and you know, just chew it all out there and put it all out there and waffle. It's a different entire. And I told you before, I mean, just going back to Keith though, there, Carl, I work with Keith. He's very articulate. He was actually a great pundit, really good pundit, very good in how he used to analyse games. And he'd have a bit of crack as well along the way. He was that sort of lad. So he gets all the elements of what it takes to control the media side of it. I think that's what it is. It will be on the pitch. It'll be on you know, how he's getting results that's going to dictate it. But Jamie Carragher does make the point, is it is becoming more that way in management. We're judging managers for how they're addressing the media and what they're saying and the message that they're giving off. Keith's very good at it. Keith understands it, and that's one of his strengths. And I think if you are coming across and you have a bit of coming across well, and you have a little bit of charisma like Keith has, it will bode well for him in his future. I do think that is a huge part of the game now.
Yeah, it would be incredible if they could nab a European spot, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it would be, and I think we would love it. I think we would love it. You know, there's a lot more Irish interest in Brentford with Caoimhín Kelleher and Nathan Collins as well. That's been the case in the last few seasons. But getting an Irish manager in the Premier League, we haven't had too many across the course of the Premier League, even top division football over in England. So when we have one, we all take that team to heart. I even going back when I was a kid, you mentioned Aston Villa there. I Aston Villa was kind of my team as a kid, only because of Ray Houghton and Paul McGrath, Andy Townsend, Steve Staunton, because there was the Irish element there. That's the way I was as a kid. So you're drawn to it. And look, you know, people might laugh at it. People might laugh at it because of that. But that's the way that it's been historically with Irish fans watching the Premier League. And we all hope Keith does well. But I think that they've got a good, first of all, they've got a good side. They've got a great way of playing. And I think that's something that does well for them. I think that they're not strong enough to really sustain a huge level of consistency. It might be a case for Brentford to go on a run of three or four wins. They might lose a couple along the way, like they've done in the last few weeks, and then go back on another run and win two or three games on the bounce. that's the way it seems you're going to get into Europe this season, because no one's showing huge amounts of consistency and going on 10, 15 game unbeaten runs. So they're in with a great shot at it. And I think that Keith, with what he's trying to implement there and what Brentford have done in general in the last 10, 15 years as well, what they've tried to put in place to make the manager's job a lot easier with sustainable staff or the continuity of the staff that's around the club, Keith's going into a position where he knows that the club is in a great position. And I think that's only going to go well for Keith and for Brentford. I think they're in with a great shot, yeah.
Yeah, well, the man Keith replaces Thomas Frank. Thomas Frank is now at Tottenham, who aren't doing so well. Thomas Frank is under pressure, and you know he's tipped as one of the managers. You don't see any of them losing their job, but it is, you know, if form doesn't change, it does seem like he could be a man on the way out. And one of the names that has been linked with that job, a job that isn't available at the moment, which must be tough when you see other managers linked to the job that you actually have. So it must be a tough time for Thomas Frank, and the work that he did with Brentford was amazing. And I'll be asking Fran about that and what are his thoughts on it. But one of the men that is linked is a man that's over in Budapest working, your former teammate, Robbie Keane. A Tottenham legend, of course, scored 122 goals in all competitions for Tottenham. He's one of the club's top goal scorers. That would be interesting, wouldn't it? He was asked he was asked about it during the week, and he kind of gave the line, you know, I'm really enjoying it over here, but, you know, never say never. As a player and as a coach, you have aspirations to be the best you can be and to reach the highest you can. That's normal. And he went on in the interview and he was kind of talking about how his kids are Tottenham fans and all that as well. So he's dropping a few seeds.
Yeah. But, you know, I'm delighted for Robbie with the success that he's having right now and he's had in his managerial career, albeit short, because I think he showed the way that it's not necessarily the conventional path that you need to take to try to get yourself into management. I think it's difficult to get into a club to start with. Robbie always saw himself as being in that head coach position and trying to build something around him, which he's done in the jobs that he's been in. And he's fiercely ambitious. Yes, I think I know that I know that about Robbie, and he will want to manage at a very high level. And his success that he's having right now suggests that he's got the makings of being able to do that. Look, people can say whether it's too early or too whatever it will be, but we've just had a conversation 5 minutes ago about Michael Carrick, about where's Michael Carrick going to be going into Manchester United. And albeit he had a short spell at Middlesbrough, he's not had a hugely long career in management. And now we're talking about him being at Manchester United. So why can't Robbie take over at Tottenham? Why can't he go in there? Keith Andrews is another one. Didn't have an awful lot of management experience going into Brentford, and he's doing a great job at Brentford. So look, if Robbie's showing that he can manage a group of players, he's shown that he can win titles, he's shown that he can do well in the Europa League and really play against better opposition with bigger budgets than he's got, and not only compete but beat them. So I think that's something that goes in his favour straight off, that he's going into Tottenham, of course, as a club legend, and what he's done there and the goals that he scored for the team. But Robbie quietly is going about things in a great way. And I'm even going back, 2 or 3 years at this stage now with Robbie. And I thought he might have gone into the MLS, that because he was looking at his career as how he's going to get some management time and how he's going to be able to get into a head coach's position because of his legacy over in North America and what he did with LA Galaxy. And he went, as I said before, the unconventional route. And he's having huge success. I think he's finding a lot out about himself and how he's going to do things in the future. So I'd love to see Robbie. First of all, I'd love to see Robbie in the Premier League. I'd love to see him coaching a team like Spurs, because then, of course, we've got another Irish manager in the Premier League. Great. But look, it might not be now. It might not be in the next 6 months. But absolutely, within the next while, I think Robbie will be considered more and more for top class roles because of what he's doing and what he's achieving.
Would you have felt that when you were playing with him? My own experience is obviously playing in team sports, predominantly hurling, and you kind of get a feeling for lads on a team who you think would be good at coaching, who'd be interested in coaching and management as the years go on. You could see, and sometimes they're not even naturally leaders on the pitch. That's not always the case. It's not always the loudest, but sometimes it's how players think about the game and how they, you know, tactically, and how they just see the game differently and try and implement that. But I suppose with With Robbie, would you have felt that, or what way was he as a player? Like,
yeah, well, virtually all my international career, every game I played was virtually Robbie in the side. So yeah. You know, I got to know him an awful lot over that 10 or 15 year period that we were teammates together. Look, I would say yes, first of all, in answer to that question, yes. And the reason why I say that, many might think no, then many might not necessarily agree with it. But yes, Robbie was always fiercely competitive. A talker, you said there, yeah. Like, you know, he was one of those players that used to moan constantly at you. And because I played deeper from him, it was about, you know, about finding him, give him the ball. I've got space, give me the ball. If you didn't give him the ball, screaming and going on at you and on at you.
And how
you
would
know,
you react?
So you'd have these...
How would you react to him?
I'd be telling him to shut up, and he'd be telling me he was going to come down and give me a right hook. No, Robbie and I would never have fallen out much, to be honest with you. But I'd certainly be able to back myself up and tell you. But Robbie was unbelievably competitive. I can honestly tell you, probably the most competitive player. And I talk about natural talent. You know, I played with Rooney at 17 at Everton, and I played with Robbie at 17. And talent-wise, there's very little for me to choose between the two of them. And that's the level that Robbie was at across the course of his career. So good, so talented, remarkable player, one of the best we've ever produced. Of course, he's the greatest goal scorer that we've ever produced. But just he had steel about him. He was a person that really, really wanted to get better and better and just score goals. He had a hunger within him that he just wanted to score goals. And so in answer to that, I would say yes. Could you make that assumption of anyone? I would say no, for any player that you do not know what they're going to do. There's been players that had no desire to play the game, like in terms of attitude in training was so bad. And they're now in coaching that I see, and I can't believe it. Some of the guys that you see in coaching with the attitude that they had to training and maybe looking after their own bodies, the professionalism and things like this. And now they'll be a total opposite in how they're actually going about things. So you can never tell. And you'll know that yourself, Carl, as well. You know, in your game, you would have seen so many players that probably go into coaching and management, and you never would have thought that they would have been going down that path. Alternatively, some of the ones you expect to don't do it. So you can never make that assumption. I think with Robbie, I think you knew he had a drive within him, constantly had a drive within him. Wherever that drive came from, he wanted to succeed. So... I think in answer to that, the overall question, I would say, yeah, I did see Robbie going into coaching and management because I think his love of the game was probably above and beyond most of the players that I would have played alongside through my career. He had so much desire to play and so much desire to get better.
Actually, we actually have a new coach for our hurling team. And this is the first time ever, Kev. The coach is younger than me. Now, is that a sign for me to retire, or are coaches getting younger?
How old is he? 20? Is he 22? He must be 22.
Yeah, anyway. That's it. Yeah, he's 22. He's just a year younger, is all.
Yeah.
So maybe this could be my last year at Championship. So it'll be the grand old age of 32 there in April. So.
Oh, you're done. What? You can't take instructions from anybody younger than you. You're too big for that.
Swallow my pride, I think. Did you ever think about getting any badges? Did you ever... dip your toe into
that
space?
No, I did. I've got my badges. I'm a fully qualified coach, actually. Yeah.
Did you like it? Or
I sat my pro license and everything. Well, I tell you how it turned out with me. I was coming to the end of my career, and I just it wasn't so much even decided. It was the path that I really wanted to go down. Lee Carsley now, you know, famously was obviously England head coach for a while. He's England under 21 manager now. He was at I'm trying to think where he was at now. I think he was actually coaching at Birmingham. Maybe at the time he was coaching at Birmingham or Brentford, and then he moved on to Coventry, or it might have been afterwards. He might have been just coaching at Coventry. I think it was Coventry actually. And he said, "Look, just go and get your badges, and then see where you go on it." And I spoke to a lot of other people as well. Brian Kerr would have been someone else I spoke to about getting my badges and things like that. So I decided to go down the path. So I started them, did my B, my A license, and then I was invited onto the pro license. So it was a path that I wanted to take. I was coaching at Hull at the time. I had the reserve team manager's job at Hull when I was coming to the end of my career.
Yeah.
And then I ended up signing a player coaches contract at Coventry. And I ended up playing more than I wanted to, actually. And I wasn't able to focus more on the coaching side. And circumstances happened, to be honest with you, Carl, how it turned out with me. It was just that I was at the end of my career, you know, personal issues and all these sort of things. And I decided, look, I'm going to take a step away and have a bit of time away to see where I'm going to go in the future. And that was pretty much the extent of it. I never then decided to get back into coaching. And I'm happier for it. I think I'm happier personally for not going into coaching, because I think that the time I needed at that time, maybe suggested to me that was where my life was going to lead me, and I needed time with my family, and I needed to give time to my kids and all that sort of thing. And I feel as though in coaching and management, it's a sacrifice that you make. It's your family life. And I feel as though at that time I wasn't prepared to do that.
Yeah, we should look at Robbie, like having to move over to Budapest while his family are here in Dublin. I think he's over and back a bit. So yeah, and you would have been a lot more greyer, I would imagine, if you had the stress of management.
Yeah.
So you wouldn't be looking as fresh as
everybody
looking.
Everyone still thinks I dye my hair. They keep saying to me over here. And there was one thing my dad always used to say to me, he goes, never trust a fella that messes with his hair. So I've taken that through my whole life. My dad was more meaning of fellas that want to go and get the old the hair piece put on and things like that. But no, I never would do that. So I can guarantee you that right now. But people think I still do. But anyway, but I think if I was in management, yeah, the grey is starting to come through a little bit on the sides here now. But anyway, it's not something I'm going to be bothered about. But if I was in management, I think they would be coming through a lot more regularly. Yeah.
Yeah, it definitely seems like you could have a lot of sleepless nights. But Michael Carrick is a man who's sleeping well at the moment. We shall see what happens this weekend. Kevin, it's always a pleasure to talk to you. Stay warm and stay safe over there in the snow. Are you kind of housebound now, or what's the story?
I know, no one's housebound here. You say they get out, they clear the road, just go on, get out and
get out
on
there.
With it. That's what it is. But we are probably, I'd say at the moment, 2 or 3 foot, 2 or 3 feet deep in snow. Yeah, so that's where we are.
Right, okay, well, mind yourself, and hopefully we'll be talking again. Thanks, Kev.
Brilliant, Carl. Thank you so much. Take care.
The Kickoff
with Cathal Minogue and Sky Sports.
Now, welcome back to The Kickoff. I'm delighted to say I have a fan returning to the show, because I last spoke to this man in September. It is Fran Carroll from the Irish Bees, the Brentford Irish Supporters Club. Fran, I must say, and I'll be honest with you, I contacted you 2 weeks ago and said, wow, you must be delighted with Brentford's current form. We'll have you on for a chat. And then with the way things have worked out, it turned out that I couldn't get you on till now. In the meantime, you've lost the last two games. I wonder, did I put a hex on you or something like that? It has been good, though.
Yeah, the forum was excellent until I started talking to you, Carl. Yeah, thanks a million for that. Yeah, we were doing well. I'd say we were 5 or 6 unbeaten. You know, I think between the, particularly in the league, I think we had 5 wins, and then we had Sheffield Wednesday. And yeah, all going well. Now, in fairness, you know, away to Chelsea, always going to be a tough game. But I think we should probably... should have got something out of it. And even yesterday, you look at the possession and the amount of shots we had, you know, good attempts on goal against Forest. Mm. And, you know, we should have been 2 up in the first half, like, you know what I mean? But, you know, those are the breaks, you know, and we've a few tough games now coming up as well with Villa and Newcastle and Arsenal. Yeah. So, yeah, but you know, we've been riding high. The great confidence again, you know, I suppose in Keith Andrews. We're all very happy with them, and the system and the players we have, you know. So still all looking very rosy for us at the moment.
Yeah, and is that a bit of a frustration at times that you don't seem to be taking your chances? I mean, these games are there to be won. Some of the chances that you had in yesterday's game against Forest, even at the very start of the game, 2 minutes in, you had a chance. Is that the frustrating part, because you know you can beat these teams?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, I think Brentford have always said it, you know, with a lot of the stats and pull out, it's all very, very fine margins that we're working on. And it even goes back to, you know, back to Thomas Frank when he started off and he had his, you know, lost the first 10 games. You know, there was no panic in Brentford, because again, they're looking at the stats, it's small margins. You know, but we've got to take them at this level. And if we're fighting for Europe, you know, have a dream, an old dream European trip away. You know what I mean? We have to take them. But that's the Premier League, you know, and it's across. You look, Jesus, the results across the weekend. You know, it's small margins all over the place. And yeah, we just have to take those, and you know, and always once you go ahead, you know, we're a difficult team to beat after that, you know. So if we can take those chances at the start of games, put a goal away, we're always going to be in a good position then to follow on and win the game, you know.
And it is fine margins, and the league is still pretty close. I mean, you're currently sitting at 8, 23 games in, but you're only 5 points off of United, who are now fourth. Like, who would have thought that a couple of weeks ago as well? So, you know, it's been quite a funny league. So, you know what I mean? If you can keep up this form, Europe could definitely be on the cards. And I mean, that would just be the dream, I would imagine.
Absolutely. You know, that's what we all want. We want to have that away day, you know, over in Europe, whether it's in Kazakhstan or God knows where, you know what I mean? Like, you'll certainly get the fans going, you know what I mean? But, yeah, absolutely. It'd be great to get there. You know, do we have the squad to do it then is the next question, you know, for the extra games and all that. But, you know, geez, we'd love to find out, you know. But we've tough, as I said there earlier on, we've tough games coming up, but we need to get a couple of results out of those. And you know, it'll be interesting to see Brentford against Arsenal in a few weeks' time. You know, can we do an old upset there and ruin things for Arsenal? You know,
can I talk to you about Keith Andrews, because obviously we have a vested interest. Everyone is rooting for Brentford deep down, you know, and you have this vested interest because of Keith Andrews. Jamie Carragher was on Sky Sports yesterday and they were having a chat about Keith, and he seemed to be pretty impressed with his communication and how he's dealing with the media. This is what Jamie had to say.
He comes across really well, speaks well. You can tell he's been a pundit. when you ask him sort of tactical questions, and you can tell, you know, how intense he is, how focused he is. He speaks really well. And I always think managers, the media is a big part of the game. And I think when a manager sort of speaks in a press conference, at times you've got to win games and lose games. But I think when you're as good as he is in front of the media, it gives supporters hope even when things aren't going well. But they're going brilliantly well, you know, at the moment. Fantastic. No one would have imagined how well it would have started. But yeah, he speaks really well.
Yeah, would you go along with that? He does seem to speak really well, and he seems to have a great connection with the players as well.
He does. I mean, he's very articulate. And I said it to you last time I was on with you. You know, yeah, before he was appointed, you know, you could see that relationship when he was the set piece coach. You know, when there was a few goals scored and the players ran over to celebrate with him. Mm. You know, so there's been a good connection with him since he came in. It was nearly 2 years ago now, and that seems to have followed through now that he's manager. You can see, yeah, again, he communicates really well both with the media, what he's trying to put across to the fans, and obviously with the players, you know, and long may that continue, because, you know, and it might be kind of in the vein of the culture in Brentford, because Thomas Frank was exactly the same. You know, he spoke well, he had a good relationship with them, and you know, it's kind of the system. It's Brentford, you know. We always talk about, you know, we have the hashtag, you see it on the billboards, togetherness, that came in with Thomas Frank, and that's throughout the club from the bottom all the way up, including the fans and the players. There is a togetherness. It's a community club, you know, real neighbourhood football team, and he typifies that with the way he communicates and the relationships he has, you know.
Are you going to get over to a game before the end of the season, or since we've been talking, have you been over at a game or at in Fran?
Yeah, I was over at the Burnley game. Which was, when was that? I can't even remember when that was. I think it was at the end of August or something.
So you bet Burnley, end of November.
Yeah,
you bet him 3-1. Bet him 3-1.
Yeah, we beat them 3-1. Yeah. Now, in fairness, it was a pretty dreadful game until the last 12 minutes when the four goals went in. At that stage, but it was looking like an unrememberable game at that stage. But yeah, I got over for that one. It was 3-1, a good win. Nice to score, you know, get a few goals at the end and something to celebrate. Am I going to get over again? Yes, I'll be over at some stage. We always run with the Irish Bees. We always go over for kind of the last home game of the season. So I'll definitely be over at that, and I'd like to try and get over for one other, even maybe an away game. You know, you never know. I might get over for Burnley away, you know. I've no set plans yet. But there'll definitely be one, if not two games, before the end of the season. That's for sure.
Yeah, that last home game is against Crystal Palace on Sunday, the 17th of May. I mean, if you're up for a European spot at that stage, that could be quite the weekend and quite the event. If people are listening and they have been getting on the Brentford, I'm reluctant to call it a bandwagon, because it's probably, it seems to be like there'll be an Irish interest in Brentford now, and maybe people are starting to like what they're seeing with the club, and you might have some new fans. Can people join the Irish Bees now this time of the season, or can they tag along, or what's the kind of setup there?
Yeah, absolutely. We're always open to new members. I'm getting some on a weekly basis.
Are you?
And we can be contacted if you want to drop me an email at brentfordirishbees@gmail.com. That's brentfordirishbees@gmail.com. You can just drop me an email and I'll send out information regards to the membership structure and what's involved. We'd love to have more Irish Bees in our ranks. It'd be fantastic.
Brilliant, brilliant. You'll be filling a Ryanair flight over in no time. Frank Carroll from the Irish Bees, thanks a million for talking to me again.
No, thanks a million, Carl. Appreciate the time.
Sensational! The Kickoff with Cathal Minogue and Sky Sports.
Watch every Premier League match this season with Sky Sports and Sports Extra.